Hello, it's on this day. Happy Friday. It's Good Friday in England. Well, in the UK at least. How far does Good Friday stretch, actually, Neil? You're up on these things.
I think it's, I mean, you know, John, I can't believe this. The day that Christ was crucified is something for the whole world.
Isn't he our Jesus?
I'm absolutely gobsmacked. Kev, you and I are under a lot of Catholic pressure over the course of this show because we're not having it. We cannot rely on John Gibbons in the slightest.
And to be fair, I take a very relaxed view of my Catholicism. I'm all about like christenings and parties at weddings and stuff like that.
You're culturally very Catholic.
Yeah, exactly. No, and as you know, I don't suffer much from guilt unless I've been on the aisle. So Catholic guilt doesn't really affect me too much, I'm glad to say.
I'm absolutely astonished. That took me aback, that question. How far does it reach? Well, at least to Rome, mate. He's giving a mass right now.
On his own in the Vatican?
Yep.
No one there?
Yep.
Yeah, makes you think, doesn't it? Tell you what. But yeah, you know, it's just hard with bank holidays. You know, Father's Days are on different days around the year. I was just thinking, I don't know. Anyway, we've got a really good... on this. Yeah,
when's American Easter? Go on.
Oh dear, we've got a really good on this day. We've got two birthdays for you, two brilliant Liverpool players celebrating their birthday today, albeit different spectrum in terms of ages. But first of all, we've got a classic game from 2 years ago, but it's an absolutely brilliant one. It's Manchester City 1, Liverpool 2 in the Champions League from 2018. A brilliant night for Liverpool going through to the Champions League semi-finals. Just a bit of context for you, Liverpool obviously 3-0 up from the first leg, had a brilliant win at Anfield, but City are on the way to 100 points in the Premier League that season, playing some of the best football ever seen in England. They'd beaten us 5-0 at the Etihad already that season, albeit in very different circumstances. But I remember coming out of Anfield, Neil, really confident. And then the closer and closer it got to this game, thinking, well, they just might, just because City were so good.
They were incredible, to be honest with you, and it's a great game because they actually show it on the night. It's one of those perfect ones where we reach, you know, we're up against the end of level boss, and the end of level boss is everything it needs to be, but you still prevail. Do you know what I mean? It really is. It's superhero stuff because they throw in that first 45, certainly first 40, because I think we actually get a little bit of a grip of it just before the break. In that first 45 minutes. I think it is that they are overwhelmingly good, Manchester City, overwhelmingly good, and it makes it special, to be quite honest with you, because if they hadn't been, if we'd have just strolled through, you wouldn't remember the game the way in which you do. It is one of the most fabulous Liverpool victories imaginable. It is one of the greatest nights imaginable, and it's in part because Manchester City are phenomenal on the night, and yet they still cannot stop this Liverpool side.
Yeah, Kev, Neil mentions there how they start. I'd forgotten just how attacking they went. I was watching the highlights back last night and, you know, Pep picks 3-1-3-3, basically, the formation is, but it's six attackers. It's three strikers and three very attacking midfielders. Liverpool are without Henderson going into it through suspension, and I've put here and Fabinho through playing for Monaco, because I think it is just worth remembering that at that point, the only defensive midfielder we had was Jordan Henderson, and even I would argue he's a better defensive midfielder now than he was then. And so Liverpool were, you know, you saw the team sheets and thought we're going to have a lot of defending to do here, and we really did in that first half.
Yeah, it was when we first saw the team sheets, I remember thinking, oh, he's gone with Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think maybe he's going to try and push on and maybe get a goal here. And then we were quite late getting the ground, weren't we, John? We got in just as the goal went in, and that first 45 minutes was one of the most terrifying of my life. I felt so tired by half-time. I was absolutely done in. I was mentally just absolutely on my knees. It was wave after wave, and it was constant. And when you consider we had Loris Karius in goal, we did well to repel most of it. Big shout out on the defensive side to Trent, because Sané pulled wide left from the front three, and he just went at Trent every single opportunity he got. I think Trent got an early booking as well, but still just managed to play him through the game, and he was absolutely fantastic. Obviously, the first half finishes up with them getting the goals, doesn't it? Which nowadays with VAR would have been allowed, but was given offside because of... I think it looked offside, but it had come off Milner, hadn't it? Was the thing. So yeah, it was a mad first half, one of the worst experiences in my life, to be honest.
The amount of people who were having absolute breakdowns in our end was just spectacular, to be honest with you. And again, yeah, if anything speaks volumes about the game, it was that there were basically people in agony watching it, in absolute agony. And again, I think that's partially to do with the fact, obviously, Manchester City, and you know how good they are, and the fact that we've only had to, you know, I think that people, you're able to enjoy the adventure a bit more if you've had the adventure. But we've just gone to Manchester, lads, and so it was, you know, it really was like you were going for the game. Everyone was broadly, you know, no one stays over, everyone's come in for the day at most, and a lot of people have just come in for the night. So it was the most game focused European game you could possibly have. The trip, it wasn't even like Chelsea away, the trip couldn't even be smaller. And everyone was in there, and it was all about getting the result because we were 3-0 up. There was no adventure here. There was no big chat. It was all about just getting the result. And genuinely, there was just, I mean, honestly, there was enough kittens for a cattery being had knocking around in that away end. No one could cope at all. It was relentless, and it was absolutely terrifying for a lot of people. But then, for me, it sort of just reminds me a bit of some games under Julio in the end. And just thinking the more this goes of the near misses, the more I just think we're going to have our say. And in the first half, I just began to sort of settle around half an hour. I think there's something that drops to Silver and Milner gets in the way of it really, really close to. And I'm just, you know, at that point, I just began to think, hang on, you just can't keep going at this speed. You just cannot keep going at this speed. At some point, they're gonna drop in one way or another. And honestly, it was just phenomenal to have just hung on.
Yeah, there's so much in that first half, Kev. There's penalty shouts, offside goals, post hit, goal mouth scrambles. It's everything they could possibly throw at you. But we do get to half time, and there's a couple of key things happen at half time. Guardiola goes berserk, basically, and he gets himself sent off. And I think maybe looking back now, he's sort of seeing that as, you know, we needed to go in 2-0. We needed to go even 3-0 here. And the fact that we haven't, maybe because, I mean, it is so hard to turn around a 3-0 defeat. And that's why it makes Barcelona really, really special. But that Barcelona game, regardless of how well we played, things went for us, and things went for us at key times. And so you need that little bit of, not luck, but you need it to go when it goes. And it didn't for City. And I think Guardiola getting himself sent at half-time was sort of his way of showing that he knew that he needed more from that first half than what he got with the team he picked and just how it had gone.
Yeah, it's such a lack of composure from him, isn't it? You think, at 1-0 up, you've only got to get 2 goals and you're level in the second half. And as you said before, there are teams that are going on. At the time, you're probably being called the greatest team in English history. And they're right up there. They had 100 points, the first team ever to do so. But because it goes against them, and I suppose the fact that it goes against them so close to half-time, and he can still feel the injustice burning when he's shouting at the referee, but it's such a lack of composure for him to do that. And the players in the tunnel must have been thinking, fucking hell, boss, if you go in and say, listen, boys, we've murdered them there, all we've got to do is score another one, and then we go into the last 10 minutes, easily get another one, it's well done. The players must have been thinking, fucking hell, do you think we can't do this now? And going from being all-conquering, the doubt start to creep in, and Liverpool players, and especially Jurgen Klopp, must have been looking at it going, we've got you on toast here, like, because you've absolutely fucking had it second half.
One of the things about the second half is they actually, we score relatively early in the second half. And, you know, it's after about 10 minutes of the second half.
Yeah, 56.
They don't do anything. There's 10 minutes there, they've absolutely battered us from pillar to post for the first half, and they don't do anything, really, in the second half, the first 10 minutes of the second half. The game is different, it is noticeably different. And I think, I take Kev's point about, you know, Guardiola should keep his head, and obviously he should keep his head. But there's a flip side where they murdered Man United the previous match in the first half, got in 2-0 up and got beat 3-2 because the legs disappeared on them. And I think he knows, not least because of how fast they've started, but also just in general, I genuinely think he comes into that game, and maybe it's an example of overthinking. Like, you know, Ferguson would always take his luck until the last possible minute. But I think Guardiola knows that if we don't do at least half this job in the first half, we're not going to be able to see them out for the whole of the 90 minutes. We're not going to be able to do it. And it's almost a tacit resignation. It's almost knocking your king over in chess. A little bit from Guardiola, I think, where he's just sort of gone, we didn't get what we needed there from that first 45. We're in real bother. And it is that they come out second half, they're not the same side. That may be to do with the Guardiola thing, but it might just be to do with the fact that they couldn't keep it up. But also, if you're Klopp, when you get them in, you're able to go, lads, you've just survived that. By hook or by crook, you just now start playing. Now start playing. And then we do, and then when he scores that goal, I mean...
Oh, the greatest goal in Liverpool history, honestly. That's my favourite goal we've ever scored. And I don't think I've ever I've never celebrated a goal like that, not in cup finals, not for when we've nearly won leagues. Not, and that was... it was so primal. I was about 5 or 6 rows up at the front, and it went absolutely mental for the longest time I can ever imagine. I think I had about 3 heart attacks and come back from each of them stronger.
What's about the celebration? I'll stick with you, Kev. Is the BT do that thing where they show a goal from every angle, and they did the one from the other end where you can just see our end and you're on it. Do we go the match with? I'm in tier 3 like a dickhead, like. But I promise everyone I was going just as mad. But that's great, isn't it? When you just get to see the end go berserk, because it's very rare you get to see yourself sort of celebrate a goal, but it's there for one of the biggest ones of sort of our generation.
Yeah, I was absolutely delighted. Andy Heaton sent me the clip of that after a match, and I was so happy to see it. It's, as you say, it's one of those things I've always wanted to see myself celebrate. But if you were videoing yourself, you wouldn't celebrate normally. And also, you shouldn't be videoing yourself in the ground, should you? So the fact that we got that, but the whole end's like it's like Dante's Inferno. There's legs where heads should be, there's lads going through like all sorts of contorted emotions. There's the funny thing is the blue smoke bomb gets thrown into our ends, and then one of our lads throws it onto the pitch, doesn't it? Which looks a bit weird. Everything from that video, because it's so low as well, it's all shot and it looks like you're from Karius's angle, and the next thing you just see Karius bombing it up the pitch to get alongside the players. And he didn't do a lot of great things in a Liverpool shape, but I'll always remember that one.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic celebration. And after the game, Neil, I don't know if it was Klopp or one of the players has asked about what he said at half time, and Klopp said he told him to be braver with the ball, and he said, back yourselves, get on the ball, pass like you can, and they do that straight away. And when I'm old and wrinkly and boring, younger people about sort of Liverpool, history, days from old, and people asking me about Jurgen Klopp, I hope I remember to say he was fucking boss at half times, because he is, and he always, for everything you say about him and all his, excellence as a manager, there's a lot to be said for how good he is at half times. And there's a bit in the Sadio Mane documentary that I'm going to talk about in a minute where Sadio talks about what he said to them at Barcelona at half time, and this is one where, he does help change that game, because you can see straight away, you were right to say the City heads dropped a little bit and what had happened to them first half, but also we're so much braver on the ball in that second half.
Yeah, and I think I think that's a great point, and I think it's a great point about Klopp, and I think it's a great point about back to the idea that there's different bits of coaching and different bits of managing, and part of what he's been brilliant at is all the long-term planning stuff. Because he's able to say to them, all the stuff that literally we've practiced to get really good at, go and do that bit now. We work and work and work on the way in which we move the ball. So now it's time to go move the ball bravely. You've got it in you. And I that's what he's saying to them at half time. It's not just the idea of, it's not let's do something different. It's let's do what we know you're good at. We've made you good at this. You've made yourselves good at this. You've done the work. Now let's go and do it. And I think that's what he's brilliant at. I think he's brilliant at reminding them of what they are at core, of what he's drilled into them as footballers. This is what we do, and this is who we are, and this is our profile as players, and as our profile as a team. So go and be the profile as the team that I've wanted you to be all the way through. And I think that what's actually improved since then is that we've got better at a number of different ways of doing good things on football pitches. But there's a lot to be said for the sheer, we've watched a tremendous side this season and an absolutely brilliant one, but there will always be something to be said for the insurgency. There'll always be something to be said for the start of a journey, and that's still what this is. This journey still hasn't finished. We've still got a league title to wrap up, but this is part of it. And this is, watching that side and seeing it do that, and that moment of just sheer both disbelief. Because when Kev says you celebrate it three times, I think you do celebrate it three times. You celebrate it first and foremost because of everything that it means, and you're in sheer disbelief. And also the fact that, let's not just call it the goal, he does fucking brilliantly. It's unbelievable. The goal is to have had that calm in that scenario. You know, when it's all on the line, that's the point, basically. He's already blamed for against Watford and shown so much, but this is the point where you're like, this fella is an absolute world star. That cometh the hour, cometh the man. All the bits and pieces that we say about all of our favourite strikers, he does in this bit.
Yeah.
It's unreal what he does, and it's tremendous. So you celebrate it for that, and then you celebrate it once out of disbelief, and then you celebrate it again out of belief. And they're the best goals. They're the best goals, the ones that you celebrate once because you can't believe it's happened, and you can't believe it's happening to us now, and isn't it amazing? And then you celebrate it again because you can believe it, and we fucking deserve it, and these lads are brilliant. And that's what this game is. That's what's in this game. Because you're then at that point, like, you go from being terrified, everyone's having kittens, everyone's in bits, we're all a mess, we're all crying our eyes out, he does what he does, and then we're giving it the big one, like, oh, sorry, we're the greatest team in the world, sorry about this. And you're like, well, how can both of those things be true? And that's the brilliance of football, that both of them are true, and he makes them both true in one moment.
There's a brilliant bit in the Oasis documentary, Supersonic, Kev, which is, I don't know if people have seen it, doesn't matter if you haven't, I'm going to describe it to you now, where Liam Gallagher talks about when Oasis were sort of at their peak in power and everyone was going mad for them. And he said, what I used to do on stage, I used to enjoy standing perfectly still and just being in control and just watching Bedlam in front of me. And I feel like, and when I watched this last night, it reminded me of that, because I've watched the documentary again recently. It's Mo Salah. He just stands there with his arms out and he's perfectly still, like Liam Gallagher, you know, fronting this crowd. And he doesn't move, he doesn't react, he doesn't even smile. He's just like, get on this in front of me. It's an amazing scene.
Yeah, for him as well. Like, what he's done there, as Neil said, he's had that composure in a moment where, as you've just described, Neil, everyone else in the Liverpool end is having kittens for days. We're absolutely shitting ourselves. And every time I watch the goal back, I still can't believe that he dinks it. Like, I just still want him to slam it now, just in case, you know what I mean? In case Otamendi gets there quickly. But he's done that, and to be that close to the absolute delirium that you've caused and be able to just take it all in must have been amazing, because while he's doing that, Oxlade-Chamberlain is like a Liverpool fan. He's screaming in his face and he's saying, fucking hell, look what you've just done. But Mo, as you say, he just doesn't move, and it must have just been like an artist, like, sort of appreciating his own masterpiece. Ah, yes, this is my creation and I'm going to enjoy the moments. Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Firmino wraps it up. It should be said, I mean, Mo feels like the winner. It feels like the one that's sending us through. They're not getting five from there, but nice for Firmino to get the goal.
What's Matt, the other thing that I want to say about it, though, is because of the way in which the end is at City, like, that's all different to the way it was in Rome. And Rome was amazing, and it was amazing afterwards. There's a thing about, the fact that it's in Manchester, the way English grounds are, all that sort of stuff. You are, you know, listen, you're tight to the pitch at Anfield, but at City, they're so tight to the pitch. And there's a really good couple of pictures of the Firmino goal celebration where our lads are so happy. And they're so happy in a way, they're like a crowd. Like, the Salah goal is dominated by Salah, but the Firmino goal's like them and us. And yeah, the Salah goal is the Salah thing of, this is amazing, he's Mo Salah, look what he's just done for us, and we're all going berserk, and he's just the coolest man in the world. But the one, like, there's so many things where I think there's loads of bits of the Klopp era where it's about getting the players closer to supporters, but nothing gets players closer to supporters than big wins, big nights, big European wins, and when you can literally get physically close, and the players get as close as they can after Firmino's goal without getting in our end. And I think it really tells the story of that idea that everyone's in it together. The song is massive. And one of the reasons why the song's massive, and this sounds really patronising and it's not meant to, is it's a song footy players can sing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really, like, you know, we've got loads of good songs, and we've got loads of songs that are a bit wry, and loads of songs that have got, you know, they've got levels of humour to them, and loads of songs that are just long and a bit pointless, and loads of songs that are brilliant but long. You're just not getting a Liverpool squad singing Scouser Tommy. and that's fine, that's allowed, but the players are in on the song, they love the song, and that's so important. They love the song, and all of this comes together, and it doesn't come together as often as you think. It is almost generational to get that sort of unbelievable closeness, and you get it with that Firmino goal. They would just love to, basically, they'd love nothing more than the referee to say, it's finished this, but you can spend the next 7 minutes seeing the game out in their end. You can just walk in there, and we can all look at the grass. And sing, and that's what they want to do at that point, because it's all over, and trust me, that's what City would love to do as well. Say, can they just go in there and this, we don't have to keep playing this game. But I think that's absolutely massive, and I think you don't get that many moments like that, and this one and the Roma away in different, completely different ways wed this gang of lads to us in a way that's part of why genuinely, and you can overstate this stuff and you can sound like a knobhead, and you know, if there was some sort of gobshite faceless Manchester City snide listening to this, he'd be telling us we're all too romantic one more time, because football's not about romance or anything like that. But he's fucking wrong. The truth of the matter is, this stuff doesn't happen as often as you think it does, and it does matter. And part of the reason why these lads have played 29 league games this season and won 27 is because they think we're fucking great, and it's because of stuff like this.
Yeah,
absolutely. So yeah, it was a brilliant night. We were set to see this game on Hot Mic tonight, but then someone brought my attention to the fact that Sky Sports are actually showing Liverpool going to Old Trafford and winning in 2009 in its full tonight. It's obviously easier when it is on the telly. It's a better picture, and it's a bit easier for all concerned. So we put it to a vote on the subscribers group, and you've overwhelmingly decided that you want to watch the game that's on Sky, which is fair enough. I'm sure it's no slight on the games. I think it's just a bit of a easier and nicer experience.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do. So tonight on Hot Mic instead, we're going to do the 4-1 at Old Trafford from 2009, which, let's face it, it's a brilliant game as well. Hey, Kev, as long as we'll beat a Manx, you're happy, aren't you?
I'm happy as it is. It doesn't matter who it is, as long as they're from Manchester and they're fucking miserable.
So we're going to do that. We might try and do this game tomorrow, because basically BT Sport, which I know less of you will have, but BT Sports are showing an hour-long highlights of this game tomorrow. So we might try and do that tomorrow after AFC.
And listen, there may just be streams, who knows?
So we'll try and make something happen. So this is all live. This is admin on air, which is what me and Neil are excellent at. But tonight will definitely be the 4-1 against Man United. That will be on Hot Mic. It starts at 8 o'clock kickoff. I'm not getting caught out on that again.
Oh God, it was a nightmare last time, John. If they're saying 8 o'clock, it is 8 o'clock. If they start that show at 8 o'clock, it's kicking off, mate.
No preamble. So we'll do that. So that'll be tonight, and we might do something a little bit funky with City Liverpool, but we need to sort that and, you know, tell Andy he's working longer. That's
fucking, you know, poor fella.
Human resources has absolutely gone out the window. It's Easter weekend, poor lad. Moving on, we want to say happy birthday to a couple of Liverpool legends. The first one is Sadio Mane. Sadio Mane is 28 today. Has anyone seen the documentary yet? It's fine to say no, it wasn't homework.
No.
I've watched about an hour of it this morning.
It's more than an hour long.
It's about an hour and about 12 or something like that. So I've basically got to just as he's got to Liverpool, but it's a very good documentary.
Yeah, it is really. I've watched about half of it, so I'm not even as far in as Kev. But what strikes you, Kev, about that opening bit is how hard it was for him to play football, which sounds mad, and you think, well, you know, the beauty of football is that anyone can have a game, and, you know, but just how hard it is for him to play any level of, you know, football, but also once he realised how talented he was to play at a level that, you know, that suited his talents really, and he basically had to run away from home to play for a decent footy team.
Yeah, it was mad. The pitch in his village is not really a pitch. It's just a loads of gravel, basically, with goalposts either end. And he's obviously playing there, realises how good he is. But the bit that was interesting about what made it so difficult is because his family are imams in Senegal. It was considered that he shouldn't be playing football at all. He should just be going to school and becoming successful that way. And as you say, he gets to an age where I think he's about 15 or 16 or something, and he goes to Dhaka for 2 weeks. But doesn't tell his family, just disappears, and he just leaves his mate there. And they say, I like it when his mate's saying to the family were all saying to me, tell us where he is or we'll beat you up. And he's like, I'm not telling you nothing. And he eventually comes back after a fortnight and says, listen, I'll come back, but I'll do one more year of school, then I'm going to play football. And it's the thing about successful people. He says it himself. He says success comes through hard work. And it can't get much harder than that, having to say to like all your family, all your village, your mum, listen, I know this is what you want me to do. And Neil have obviously thought that with the best of intentions. But he's made that decision as a child, basically, that, listen, I'll go back and do one more year of school so that I'm not upsetting anybody. But then it's football time and I'm going to make it. And when you've got that sort of drive and ambition, it's no wonder he's become the player that he has.
Yeah, the player he's become, Neil, is a remarkable one, and one that I wasn't expecting at all when we signed him. He's 77 goals now in 161 appearances, which is basically one in two for Liverpool. And you think about, you know, the player that we signed and how he's had to, you know, how he's played a lot wide. Obviously, he played deeper quite a bit for us, especially in that role where Mo Salah, you know, is his breakthrough season and he's asked to do a job for the team. And considering all that, you know, to be one in two, man, you know, for us, and that's only going to improve, that's only going to go one way, that is just remarkable.
Yeah, it is. I think it's incredible. I think he's shown all the way through. I think the hard work thing's obvious. I mean, it's obvious. It goes without saying, it's not that any of them aren't hard working, and I mean that broadly speaking of the vast majority of Premier League footballers before we even get to our lads. But I think what he's shown is an unbelievable desire. From the minute he's arrived, from that first game against Arsenal, I think he's shown, like, this is what I've been waiting for. And you know, that in many ways, I think that's one of the things that sort of defines a really good Liverpool player from one who's... There's some who get overwhelmed by it, but there's also some who at times may or may not see us as a little bit of a stepping stone or as part of separate ambitions or something like that. Whereas I think that the players who you're able to say really get Liverpool... get it in that sort of, and really produce and prosper at Liverpool, get it in that sort of, I'm both excited and liberated by this opportunity. I see it as an obligation to work really, really hard, but I see it simultaneously as something that you can really get your teeth into. And I think that's certainly true of attacking players. For instance, I think that's, you know, however he's left and whether or not he would, you know, and what's happened since he's left, that's one of the things that I always liked about Coutinho. That I reckon if we'd have got Coutinho when he moves to Europe at first, when he ends up at Inter Milan, when he ends up where, you know, when he's trying to work himself out, I don't think we necessarily get him as we need to get him. But we get him after he's had a couple of negative experiences. We get Sturridge at a moment where Sturridge is like, fuck this, I just want to play first team football and these lads will let me do it. I'm going to be amazing for them. And guess what? It's great scoring goals for Liverpool. And I think there's a few of those where you get the timing right and suddenly the player absolutely goes berserk and loves it. Torres, you know, everyone forgets that there was loads of Liverpool won't be able to sign Torres. He'll want to go to a different club, etc., etc. And then he gets here and he straight away goes, this is brilliant, this is everything I want it to be. And I think that's certainly, you know, since about the year 2000, I think there's players who've turned up, got into it, got it, and really prospered. And I think one of the best examples is Mane. And he's prospered in three different phases. When he first arrives and changes that team, because he does, I think he is Klopp's most important signing. I think he is the signing that moves us into a genuine Champions League team. And I think from there, that buys you room to manoeuvre. That gives you room to not, you know, listen, it's been a lot of success back-to-back, but that actually gives you some room not to be successful, if you see what I mean. We've never needed to use it, but I think as soon as Mane turns up, he is the final piece of the finishing top four jigsaw, and it's interesting the season that we finished top four. It's looking like it's going to happen right up until the point at which he goes away for the Cup of Nations, and then he comes back and then he gets the injury against Everton in the league, and then he's not available for the rest of the season and we have to just crawl over the line. But when we had him, we looked like we not just finished top four, we looked like we were going to finish second whilst he was playing for us in that run. So there's that. Then I think he has the phase where he struggles a little bit, but then he comes to terms with the new Mo Salah future. And he does, as you say, a really good job, John, and still contributes in the second half of the 17-18 season massively. I mean, he scores a goal in the Champions League final. It's worth remembering that, because it's in the game we don't talk about. And then he kicks on again. And it is, there's three different phases of a footballer. And there's still room for us to get two more than any of the other three lads up front. I want him to stay, and part of the reason why I want him to stay is I really want his centre mid John Barnes era for us. Like, I'm all in on 36-year-old Sadio Mane running the show in centre mid. Like, I'm honestly, it's the football that I almost most want to see play for Liverpool.
Well, I mean, there's another good example of that coming up later for us in part three of this show. But I mean, he is a wonderfully intelligent footballer, and you know, he's had so many big moments for us, Kev. I don't know what your favourite Sadio Mane memories are.
My favourite Sadio Mane memory is not actually something he did in a game. It was when, remember we were in Rome after a match and like all the stewards around the pitch were trying to hold the players back, and the players were sort of like, you could see they were thinking, fuck off, we want to be with them to celebrate it. And but no one would make the first move, and the next thing Sadio Mane's just like, get out of my way, based right through all the stewards, and you could see all the other, it's like kids in a playground, the first one to do it and then everyone piles over. But it was Sadio Mane, and in that documentary it shows all of his family are in the box watching the second leg of the Barcelona game, and that's one of the pictures he's got up on the wall. It's a picture of him and his black sailing kit, and he's sort of giving the arms up to the daddy, the way he does, actually that's sort of a signature move he does, but he's giving it up to the full end. And it's another example, as Neil said before, about how close this team are to the fans and what it means, because I remember when he done it, I nearly burst with pride. I was so made up that he'd gone, fuck off, you don't keep me away from my people. And it felt again like another moment where you could point at and say the fans and the players were as one. So yeah, that's my favourite Mane moment.
It's dead interesting all that, because he is like everyone who's, all the journalists who speak to him, whenever you see him interviewed, he's really softly spoken. He seems an absolute, like he's an absolute gentleman. He has walked past John Gibbons in more mix zones than I could care to mention. He's got no interest whatsoever in speaking to John Gibbons.
Gives me a lovely smile though.
He does, he smiles at you on the way past as if to say, absolutely no way, lad, but thank, I'm glad you tried. And that's what he's like. But it's, so it's dead interesting that in that moment, and I think part of that is, listen, there's some people who communicate with what they do, and there's some people who communicate with words, and both are perfectly valid. And I think in that moment was him communicating with what he does. He'd much rather do that than chat. And that's what he's doing there when he's bursting over. It's his great big, I feel part of what yous do, and I'm so pleased you feel part of what we do. And I think it is, I think it's really interesting that it is him who does that. When, you know, there's a lot of big personalities on that pitch around the Roma game. There's big Verge knocking around. There's the captain who's gone and done the Sean Cox bit by that point as well. Alexander-Arnold ends up coming over later on. But as you say, Kev, it is Sadio who, you know, he's not Andy Robbo. He's not coming out talking to us. He's not throwing lads onto the turf or anything like that, but it is Sadio who comes over and says, no, I'm gonna be with them.
Yeah,
he's a fantastic footballer. I'm made up we've got him, and as Neil says, the future holds very bright things for him as well, so we shall see.
Hopefully, his four goals a season from centre mid when he's 36, one of which is an overhead kick,
definitely.
To celebrate Sadio Mane, today we are re-releasing the post-match show from the Mane Derby. It's also known in some circles as the Kev Walsh Derby, but...
we won't discuss that.
as it's Sadio Mane's birthday, we're letting him have it for today. I haven't listened to it since. I don't even know who's on it. I absolutely can't
wait. It's wild because we nearly died in the cab coming in because we had to hold the door shut. The door was broken in the cab, so there was like seven of us in the cab. The number of things this taxi driver was doing wrong, and there was someone lying down on the cab, and someone else had to hold the door shut so that it didn't fly open. And I was all sort of tumble out, heading back to town. So it's absolutely bananas, and loads of people are just drifting in and out all the way through.
I'm going to enjoy that. I'm going to enjoy listening to that, and I'm going to just enjoy remembering how drunk Kev was that night as well. As I do it, trying to walk Kev back from the ground through Stanley Park to the Glenbrook was an interesting time, but you know, it was good practice for trying to deal with Ted.
This is all very fair, and I have to just accept it.
Okay, we'll move on to the last section, and it's another birthday. It's Ian Callaghan. Happy birthday to Ian Callaghan. He's 78 today. He still does bits for Liverpool Football Club, Ian Callaghan. He's still sharp as anything. Still looks like he could do a job, to be honest with you. He was born in Toxteth. He's from a great dynasty of Liverpool players from Liverpool. It's for such a small area. It's produced so much talent. So after them, just off the top of my head, obviously there's Howard Gayle, there's Robbie Fowler, most famously, and now carrying on the tradition, Curtis Jones as well. Callaghan played 857 times for Liverpool between 1960 and 1978. He does the whole of the Shankly era and a bit of Paisley for good measure. Just to throw that in perspective, you know what that period is. He starts the 1965 FA Cup final and also the 1977 European Cup final for Liverpool. Between 62 and 78, he plays less than 40 games in a season only once. That was 70-71 when he got a bad injury. But that injury meant that he moved from the wing to central midfield to play the Sadio Mane role. what I also love is when he leaves Liverpool in 78, he carries on for four more seasons, which I couldn't believe. He goes to America and Australia, which I sort of get. A lot of these boys from that area go and do it a year in America, and I think he'd enjoy themselves greatly. He does a bit in Australia as well, but then he's playing for Crewe, age 40, and I'm just thinking, come on, Cali, like, you know, but he obviously absolutely loves the game. And Kev, it's a record that might never be beat, you know, 857 appearances for Liverpool. You know, you'd love it if someone like Trent got close, but it's an astronomical amount of games, even if before you get to how good he was, must have been to have played that many.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable record, and I think, listen, Trent could well be at Liverpool for a long, long time, but Cali's record, it's 18 years playing an average of nearly 50 games a season. Like, it's wild, and when you consider as well, during that time, it was either none or one substitute in a game. So if you're playing in a game, you're playing 90 minutes 99% of the time, and it'd be fantastic if Trent got there, but obviously, what's Carras? Carras 737, is he? So he's 120. So he's at least a minimum of two full seasons off. And in reality, at the end of your season, it's probably three seasons. So I hope Trent does get somewhere near there. But Ian Callaghan has been, well, he's one of the most decorated players we've ever had, isn't he? And he's also one of the nicest fellas you could ever wish to meet. He's such a gentleman. And he's always got time for everyone who wants to speak to him. No matter if it's one person or 10 people, he'll have the same amount of intensity when he's talking. He's a fantastic fella.
Yeah, he does the full journey, which is interesting in itself, Neil. Obviously, you know, 1960 when he comes in, you know, he's playing for Liverpool in the second division, and he's playing before Shankly. And Shankly comes in and obviously changes the team and changes everything. He changes the whole football club. Do you know what I mean? You know, he says he calls Anfield the biggest toilet in Liverpool when he might have even been in England when he took over, because he was perfect saturation. But you know, when he takes over, you know, there's so many lads who fall by the wayside, but you know, Cali's the one he keeps, and I think that's something that speaks volumes as well.
Yeah, it's massive. I think it tells you a hell of a lot that all the way through, he finds a place for Callaghan, looks after him. He also wants that balance. He wants one flying player on one flank and Callaghan on the other being really, really steady. I think that's what he commits to, and he's not the first manager to commit to that. You know, I think, well, sorry, he might actually be the first manager to commit to that, but he's most definitely not the last. Someone who looks after the ball on one flank is tidy for you, and then on the other flank is the flying winger. He'll turn up and do bits and pieces in a brilliant way, and I think that is what he's about at that phase. And just sort of, it's difficult to properly appreciate it, because you don't get to watch the games, or if you do get to see highlights, the sort of player I think Callaghan was, you know, he wasn't a goal scorer. That wasn't the point. It was that he was there to keep everything ticking from a Liverpool point of view. And I think that's difficult to appreciate, but that's also part of what gets you this many appearances, if you see what I mean. You know, I think that explosive footballers, don't get me wrong, you know, they're incredible, but the point is the word explosive, they explode. Callaghan's is there to be a metronome. Everything you read about him, everything, the way in which he's viewed, he's looked at, he's there to be the steadiest possible footballer for Liverpool, and that's his job. His job is very much in the Shankly quote of who's carrying the piano and who's playing it. Callaghan's his most trusted person to carry the piano. He carries it for 14 years for him. He carries it for 14 years for him. But then, you know, it is the idea that there are other people around to play it. But all that said, he does win Footballer of the Year one year. And I've always wondered whether or not that's a bit of a lifetime achievement award, Footballer of the Year or not. And if it is, whether or not everyone really regretted it, because he then still played on for four more seasons and won two European Cups. So, you know, I think that they might, you know, it might be one of them where they're thinking, well, if we give it to Callaghan, there might be the last decent chance to give this to Callaghan. Nah, it's not, lads. You're going to get a lot more opportunities.
Yeah, there's a wonderful quote by Bill Shankly, which is a nice place to sort of round up on Ian Callaghan. He says, Shankly said, Ian Callaghan is everything good that a man can be. No praise is too high for him. Words cannot do justice to the amount he has contributed to the game. Ian Callaghan will go down as one of the game's truly great players. Now, I know Bill Shankly was famously good with his words, but I think those words speak very highly indeed and are much better than we can conjure up ourselves. So I'll leave it there for today. Thanks a lot to Neil and Kev for joining me. and you enjoy your weekend, bank holiday or otherwise. We will be back on Monday with On This Day. But in the meantime, enjoy yourselves, enjoy your weekend. Do join it. Tune in for Hot Mic tonight. We'll try and get things going. We'll definitely have AFQ Hot Mic tomorrow and hopefully that hour-long highlights as well. But yeah, thanks a lot to, yeah, again to Neil and Kev, and that has been On This Day for Another Day.